You're listening to Small and Mighty Conversations, a podcast celebrating and supporting the small business owner and creative entrepreneur. With your host, me, Sam Burgess. You're listening to Season 5, Episode 7. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this week's episode of Small and Mighty Conversations. I apologise if the sound isn't amazing today, just for the intro and outro. I'm actually having to hide because my neighbours are having their hedges cut, and no part of my house seems to not be picking up the noise of their power saws, which is really frustrating. But anyway, today I'm speaking with the lovely Angie Parker. Since recording, Angie has had incredible success. So we recorded back in April, and she got her work into the new collectibles collection at Liberty London. She designed a rug for made.com, and she was in the exhibition of 19 leading UK rug makers and designers at the end of July called Under Your Feet. She's also had loads of other smaller events, and you could go check her out on Instagram and get up to date with what's been going on. But today we really talk about how she started her business and how she markets her business, and we kind of share our tips around running a business. And there's quite a lot from me in this episode, as I had some thoughts around certain things such as mailing lists. One thing to bear in mind, we recorded this back in April before MailChimp made their changes to their accounts, and they no longer offer any free accounts, which is really frustrating. So you'll have to ignore that bit. However, I've actually recently left MailChimp and gone over to Flowdesk, which is a brand new platform which has a founding offer at the moment. No matter how many subscribers you have in your list or however many emails you send, they have a flat offer, which you can click the link in the show notes and take advantage of that 50% off offer. Using my affiliate link, which means that I get a small kickback, but that's at no cost to you. But anyway, enough from me, and on with today's show. Hi, Angie. Welcome to Small and Mighty Conversations.
Hello, Sam.
I am so excited to have you on the show today. So to kind of kick off, like I do with every guest, it would be wonderful if you could introduce yourself to the Small and Mighty listeners and let them know who you are and what you do.
Cool. Yes. Hello. Well, I'm Angie Parker, and I run Angie Parker Textiles. And in my business, I create luxurious textiles, handwoven textiles, rugs and furnishing fabrics.
Amazing. And how did you kind of get into doing that?
Okay, I'll try and keep this brief. I trained as a rug weaver in the early 1990s. Okay. And with the intention of starting up a business when I graduated. And then I went to new designers with the college, and I was awarded Floor Covering Designer of the Year for one of my rugs.
Wow.
So I know, it was a good start. And then, like most makers, I took a part-time job to support my practice while I was setting it up. Mm-hmm. And my part-time job was really nice. I started off dressing backstage on musical theatre. Mm-hmm. And to cut a long story short, that ended up becoming a 15-bit longer career. I ended up going on tour with musicals, became a wardrobe mistress in the West End, did costume for theatre and telly. So the original plan to start the business then was always there. I was weaving during this time as an interest. Mm-hmm. And always talking about this business that I was going to set up. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got sidetracked by this other career, which was great. But that was kind of, with hindsight, that was all good, because it meant I bought my house, I had a car, you know, I was independent, all those things were in order. Then, trying to keep it brief, I then met my husband, had kids. And again, it was still like, this business, I will get round to it one day. And then my husband and I lived in India, and it's another little thing. And then, then we had the kids. And then after the third child, they were quite close together. So I had a 3-year-old, 1.5-year-old and a baby. Mm-hmm. And so going back to doing the costume wasn't feasible at that point. And so that was my opportunity to go for it. So we'd basically gone down to surviving on my husband's salary.
Yeah.
After baby three, I'd worked between 1 and 2 and 2 and 3, but it made sense for me to stop work then and just focus on the kids. And that's when I finally properly dusted down the loom and the business plan. And so when was that? I'd say I've been in business 5 years now.
Okay.
Properly.
Okay, amazing. So having gone down to like, you know, just one income, was there anything that you kind of needed to do financially, I guess, to help kind of finance your ambition and get yourself started up as a business? Or was it, you know, did you get a loan? Did you go down that kind of route, or did you just kind of use it savings, etc.?
Well, yeah, no, that's a really good point, because I basically, this business grew in an Elves and Shoemaker style.
Okay.
Because when the children were very young, I obviously couldn't make much. So I did a local arts trail and got some old work that, you know, samples and stuff, and framed that. Mm-hmm. And wove some panels to put on chairs and made these two chairs. And they were the new thing that I'd done. And it had taken so much effort with these kids around to make these two pieces. And a couple bought them and are still in touch with this lovely couple. And so it was like, wow. Somebody's going to buy my stuff. You know, it's the start. So it started off so simply, so effortless. So that was, and then, you know, the kids were still very young at this point. So the following year, I kind of made six chairs and I sold them. And then I had some, you know, the money from the business. I was working a little bit part-time childminding as well, because I already had a house full of kids, a few more wouldn't make
Yeah, money. Why not?
so that was kind of bringing in a little bit of money. So I sold more. And at that point, then I could invest in some decent photography. Mm-hmm. Because we got used to living on one salary and I had a little bit of money coming in, anything I earned in the business, I could reinvest straight back into the business.
Fabulous. That's the best kind of scenario to be in, really, is to kind of start small, but then, like, you know, not spend the money that you're making and just kind of reinvest it back into the business to help kind of eking your growth.
Yeah, completely. I think especially for the nature of work that I make, I'm not a typical business in I saw a gap in the market and I created something to fill that gap.
Yeah.
It's my business is that I make something I love and then try and find the customer. And actually, I'll make the point now that we're going to talk a lot about business, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's a given that I love what I do. I love weaving. I love making things. So however nitty gritty we get into business talk, it all comes back to the fact that I really love what I make.
Which is wonderful. And that is, you know, so important that you don't kind of lose that. And that can happen, you know, as it becomes a business, suddenly something that you're very passionate about can become laborious because you kind of have to keep making things. I think it was, Emma that I spoke to, who said that she was making her embroidery and she just found that she didn't like doing it anymore, but was having to do it because that's what the customer wanted. But she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And it's that kind of crazy moment where you're like, yeah, I know I'm making money, but I don't want to do this anymore. And that is, you know, a big turning point for a lot of makers and creators, is that it's just like, but I don't enjoy it. And what can I do to continue to make money but actually enjoy it? So do you think has there ever come a point for you where you're a bit like, ugh, you know, I don't want to make another one of those?
No, I heard that one with Emma and I know exactly, yeah, what you're saying. And luckily, no, I've managed to avoid that.
Good.
But I will say, I think that may have hampered the growth of the business, or certainly the income. But I'm playing a very long game with mine. And I'm well aware of that. And I knew that from the start. So I think making sure that I love what I do, it's the main thing I've got to do. And earning a living is absolutely vital.
Hmm. Yeah.
And finding that balance. And I don't know the answer. I'm still working out every day. And so what I do with my business is, because I've got 5 years now to look back on, I realize I run it in like chapters of a book.
Okay.
I know. I only just had this little epiphany the other day. It's like, oh, that's what's happening. So there'll be something that happens for whatever period of time, and it's either working or it's not. But then, if it's not bringing in the money, I will adapt it so that I can still do what I want and bring in the money. And sometimes it does mean I compromise the creativity a little bit. Never enough that I'm unhappy, but it's just part of it, and I'll do that for a while, and then it's like I suddenly get this urge to be entirely creative again. And it's probably not making sense. You'll need examples. And
yeah, I do. I was just about to say, for every single person, I just know every single person that would be listening is thinking, ask the question, Sam. Ask the question. Ask a how. Ask for examples. So I have to ask for examples.
Okay, so let's look. Last year, I did something that I didn't think I would do, and I outsourced a design to have it hand-woven, a rug design, and had it hand-woven overseas.
Okay.
And it's completely different business from the one I set up. My work is one-off, exquisite, hand-woven pieces woven by me. But if my business was going to keep going, I did desperately, not desperately.
No, I know what you mean, though. I know exactly what you mean.
But I did definitely need more income. So I took this risk. And basically, after 3 years, the plan was that I would be putting back into the family.
Okay.
And I'm doing that more, but I still wasn't doing it as much as we'd hoped I would be. Mm-hmm. You know, still wasn't generating that. So we took this chance. My husband's very much part of it, because a decision I make for the business affects us all. Mm. And he said, go for it. So I invested all the money from the previous year to do this limited edition run.
Wow.
I know.
That's risky.
My God.
Very risky. I love a risk, though. I reinvested pretty much all my profit when I rebranded the business. So I love a risk.
Yeah, well, I did that. I did an exercise that I'd learned through the Design Trust, Patricia Van Danacker, of what's the worst that can happen. And the worst that can happen was that we would lose that money. And it was a lot of money to lose. And it would have meant, you know, it would have hurt. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't have been the end of the world. We wouldn't lose the house. We wouldn't, you know, we'd still eat.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I can cope with a big learning curve like that. It would have been awful if it hadn't worked, and thank God it did. But then you're more determined to make it work as well.
What was the motivation for outsourcing and to spend such a large amount of all of your profits? Where did that kind of idea come from? Why did you choose to do it? And can you tell us how it's paid off for you?
Yeah, it happened. It was just a kind of common sense decision at the end of the day. I was at Decorex, which is a very nice trade show in London, with my original one-offs. And I was getting interest from the interior designers and so on, as it should have been. But by about the eighth person who came up to me and said, who do you outsource to? And I was like, oh, I don't. And then the look I'd get. I was like, oh, hang on a minute. All these people have been in this game a lot longer than me.
Yeah.
And a few other people had said it. And it's like, why am I being so stubborn about this? So, yeah. And then part of the reason was I was quite scared. It's a big deal.
It's a huge risk. It's one of those things you're giving away your baby. Hoping you get it back.
Yeah. But what happened was then I just had a conversation with somebody who was just a person I could trust. And I just said, could you help me? Could you hold my hand while we do this? Because I've never done it before. And they did. And it worked. So it did change what I did last year as a business, because I suddenly became a rug seller more than the rug maker. And that was good, because the plan was to sell them through at retail, and I priced them up to be sold at retail. But the best way of selling them was, again, with me going out the way I had done with all my originals, and just to being very honest and saying that story. Mm-hmm. I make about 10 rugs like this a year, but then I've done this as well to make my business more sustainable. And because I'd used recycled waste plastic as the yarn in the outsourced rugs.
You're so on trend,
aren't you? I was, for the first time in my life, I was on trend. So it's like,
That's incredible. I love that. I love a story of risk and success, you know, and I also like a story of risk and where it doesn't work out, because we can all learn a lot from it. But I'm very pleased for you that obviously that you took a risk and it has paid off for you. So is that the kind of direction that you're going to take your business in now and do predominantly outsourcing?
I'm working that out, actually. it will be part of it.
Okay.
I've no plan at this moment
to outsource it all.
No, not yet. One day. But there's a lot of reasons why I won't do that just yet, even though it makes a lot of business sense.
Is it just that you don't want to let go of it?
No, it's just my more personal than that.
Okay.
The reason my business exists is because of the three young ladies in our lives, our children. And I know that once I grow to that extent, just because of the ages they are now, they're just at the end of very cute childhood. And it sounds really naff, but I don't want to miss it.
No.
So I'm keeping the business at a manageable by just me level. And once I start growing in that direction, it's going to become a bigger beast. And it's going to be put more of a strain on my time, I think. So I'm just trying to, it sounds really silly, especially because I'm trying to grow a business to pay me a living. But I'll be able to do that, hopefully. Whereas this little pocket of time with the children is kind of, it's important that I don't miss it.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think that's admirable that that is what you want to do. And I think, you know, that makes complete sense to me, complete sense. But you've got a long-term vision. But, you know, a lot of the guests that I have on Small Mighty, it's all about, you know, that balance between work and life. And, you know, we all have our reasons for going self-employed. And a large majority of people that I know that are self-employed, whether they be guests, whether they be clients, whether they be friends, it's because of personal decisions. Whether it, you know, in my case, I don't want to work for somebody else and I wanted to be able to spend all my time with my dog. Like, there's just little things like that, that it's okay to have those reasons. And for you, you know, it's really important that you don't miss a key time in your children's childhood.
Well, I'll have to watch it because there'll always be a key time in their lives.
Yeah.
and three teenagers might need more of me than three very well behaved at the age they are now. But I think I joked about it on my Instagram feed a few weeks ago. I started a business to have a job that fitted around the children.
Yeah.
And what's actually happened is I've got these three little girls who fit very nicely around the business, and I took a picture of them sat in my studio reading because I had to finish some work off.
That's perfect.
And they're lovely and they're so good. And yeah, I hope they hear this one day and realize that I did appreciate how good they were at playing amongst themselves when I've got deadlines to do.
Oh, bless them. Well, talking about Instagram, that moves on quite nicely to marketing. So talk me through how you market your business. What channels do you have and which one's the most valuable to your business?
Oh, see, I do like the marketing.
Good. And
I do wonder if I might have a career in marketing might have been another thing for me in a parallel universe. But I love them all. Love Instagram, love my social media, although I do call it anti-social media. the smartphone may be making me dumb, but it's made a huge difference, especially as a working parent. I can do my Instagram on while I'm in the queue in Aldi or anything.
Yeah, you can. It fits in nicely when the kettle's boiling, when you're in the post office queue, when you're wherever. During an ad break on TV, there's plenty of time to squeeze in social, especially, you know, a quick flick through Instagram. So how do you find Instagram works for your business? Do you find you get a lot of sales through Instagram? Is it more just about building awareness? How does it kind of work for you? Have you embraced Instagram stories?
Okay, yeah. I started off thinking it was going to be using it more as a tool and learning a lot about how to use it. But what I've found has actually happened is I've just become a bit more organic with it. Mm-hmm. I am followed a lot by other weavers and other makers. Mm-hmm. So, and only a small percentage, I'd say, would be a customer. But that said, I do get a few thousand pounds worth of work directly from being on Instagram each year, so it is a good income stream. So I shouldn't I should take it a bit more seriously, I think.
I mean, do you have like a strategy in place for your social media?
Not really.
I love the honesty.
Yes and no. Yeah, well, I think that's why it's working for me, because it is very much this is what's happening today, and there is something happening all the time. Because I get asked a lot to come and talk about how I run my Instagram, because people like the way I do it. And I think if you've got enough going on, and to talk about the content, and it's just like, if you've got enough going on, just let it go with the flow. I put a lot of myself into my personality and myself into Instagram, and that's runs throughout my business, Angie Parker Textiles, is just...
It's you.
It's just, I mean, obviously it's about weaving, but...
But that's a part of you, and I think that's it, especially if your business is your name. You need to be quite present.
Yeah, so I'm aware of the rules. I've read lots about the rules and I've seen people using the rules so brilliantly. And it's like, well, we don't need another person doing that. I'll just do it. I'll just do it my way.
If it works, then why change it? That's what I always say. I always think, you know, if it's something works, you can normally take it up a level. But if you're quite content with it working for you, then if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yeah.
Well, and I'm going to make myself very unpopular now, probably, and I don't mind if you cut this from the podcast.
Go on.
But the problem with all the social media is it's free, and it could all fall down at any point.
Good.
And so there's a part of me I've invested a lot of time, and I have reaped the benefits of the time I've invested. Mm. But always in the back of my mind, it's like it's not, it's not a solid. As we like to think it is. And I do have a notebook every now and again where I scribble down some of the connections I've made just in case it all fell down one day. Because that would be
that.
A real shame. I know.
Well,
I'm not very organised, but I've done that.
Do you have a mailing list though? Because I always think with social media, you're putting your eggs in somebody else's basket, and a mailing list is really where you need to get those followers onto.
Yeah, I do. And yeah, I've got to, I think... You can get up to 2,000 followers for free, can't you, on MailChimp?
You can, but this is what I always do, and this is what I tell everybody to do. When I hit 2,000 or 1,999 before I start having to pay, I do a clean out. I go through all of them, and if you haven't opened my last three emails, you get booted off the list, and that's that. So I refuse to pay for it because until I get to 2,000 and I've got, 100% open rate, which is never going to happen. Nobody gets that. Then why should I be paying for it? So every time I see my open rate drop down a little bit and my subscribers have gone up, it's time to do a cleanup.
That is genius tip. Good skills. Yeah. Right.
Save yourself money. I mean, because it's all it is vanity. Because I have clients that will come to me and they're like, I want 10,000 people on my mailing list. And I'm like, really? 10,000? And they're like, yeah, I want 10,000. I'm like, and what open rate would you like? And they're like, oh, well, 60, 70%. I'm like, okay, that's a big ask. That's a massive ask. Would you not rather have like 2,000 and like a 75-80% open rate? Because once you hit like 10,000 and stuff, you'll struggle really to get more than like 30% if you're lucky. I would much rather know that every single person on my mailing list is actually opening my emails, clicking my links, and hopefully buying workshop tickets, online courses, etc., rather than, yeah, but I have 10,000 people on my mailing list. It's like, it's a vanity metric. It's the same with saying, when people say, I want 100,000 Instagram followers, and I'm like, what if none of them buy? Really? Why would you want so many? Because you've got to maintain that audience. You've got to entertain them. You've got to keep them engaged. But the chances are, I doubt all 100,000 are buying from you. I'd much rather you had 1,000 followers and all of them bought with you. All of them gave you £100 profit each year. That's £100,000 profit that you're making in your business off 1,000 Instagram followers. I know which one I'd prefer.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Well, that's it. And Instagram, it feels lovely because I don't follow all the celebs or anything that. So it's literally just a little maker's haven. And the majority, like I say, the majority of my followers are friends and fellow makers. So,
which is lovely. And I think that's great because, I have multiple Instagram accounts, but my Sam Burgess UK one, I don't follow celebrities or meme accounts or anything like that. It is just for business. So I only follow things that are related to my business. And then I have a whole separate account where I have all my indulgences and follow celebrities and bloggers and fashion brands and stuff that interest me, and like crazy accounts that you see that have I've got one that I follow that's like lost words, which I really like because I'm quite into things like that, like words that we don't use anymore that mean certain things. And they're things that are great, but it means when I log into my Sam Burgess UK account, I know it's work time, I know my feed is filled with businesses I want to work with, target customers, things like that, rather than, oh yeah, I got totally distracted by following everybody from Love Island and what they were doing type thing, because it's just not a productive use of my time. So I love the fact that you're doing something very similar. It is a community around your business, and that means every time you're on Instagram, it is productive for your business.
Yes. Yeah, That's what I tell myself.
Well, I say you've nailed it because, yeah, I think otherwise when I hear from people and they're like, oh my God, I can spend hours on Instagram and it's such a time suck and, you know, I don't see any results from it. And then I look down who they're following and I'm like, how much time do you spend liking Kim Kardashian's photos? That's not going to help your business. Like, you need to really be productive with the time that you are spending on there and treat it like you would, you know, reconciling transactions on your accounting software. You need to treat it the same, that it's part of your business and it's a job. But yes, mailing lists, definitely, you know, really important. Get as many of those followers as you possibly can onto your mailing list, because like you've already mentioned, you know, it might not be there forever and people's accounts get hacked all the time, people get booted off Instagram all the time. You know, you wake up one morning and you can't log into your account, that's the chances of you getting back are quite slim, and you've lost all those people. But at least, you know, if you've got a mailing list, you can send an email out to everybody on your mailing list and say, hey, come find me on Facebook or Twitter or whatever the latest social media is that we've all abandoned Instagram for. You just
or whatever's next. Yeah.
Well, exactly, what is next? Who knows But something will appear before long, and if they do well, Facebook will probably buy it, so you know, we'll still be part of the same group.
Probably be chatting in real life. That'll be the next thing. Watch it.
Oh my goodness. Chatting in real life. Oh my goodness. Talk to me a bit about how you sell your rugs and your weaving. Do you wholesale?
No. Well, I say that. I sell through craft galleries.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess I'm possibly a bit different to businesses you normally have on.
No, it's always interesting to know how people, you know, retail their products.
Yeah, so through craft galleries is similar to retail, but I can't obviously mass produce, so I can't go into a standards shop or a giftware shop. But art galleries, craft shops as well, they are quite open to having small orders and things.
Yeah, like one-off pieces and things that you can give them to sell on, etc.
Yeah, I do a lot of contemporary craft shows, but it's a very long game. It's especially the rugs. It's not a spontaneous buy. And so I put them in my marketing budget, and I tend to go to them and chat and have conversations and try and make an impression on people and get them onto my mailing list. And then 2 or 3 years down the line, you get a little email out of the blue saying, it's our wedding anniversary, or I'm leaving work and they've asked me what I want, so can I commission a rug? So
love that.
It's a very long game, and I'm also, when I started the business, I was weaving at home. I was working on a finer scale and creating fabrics I was using for upholstery, and I want to make these more into art panels now. So there's a little bit of a, you know, a craft artist maker in me. So the business is, like I say, going back to this chapters thing, the business is starting to go into a new chapter now of high-end craft, hopefully.
Okay.
So that's obviously impacting how much income I can make from the business, because selling high-end craft, again, very different thing. So what I've actually done at the moment now is increase the hours I'm working in my part-time job.
Okay.
Which is a bit bizarre, because last year was the most successful year for sales of the recycled plastic rugs and the one-off rugs, and now I'm just ducking around the edge again.
Yeah.
But it never feels like I'm making a decision forever. And that's the joy of being a business of one person at the moment. You know, I can try these things and get it just right for the time in my life that it is. But again, there is this very long-term goal of expanding it beyond this.
And what is motivating you to achieve this goal?
It's, I think, the fact that it's been a 20-year dream and it's finally happening, that's quite a motivational thing as well. I think to be a craft maker is quite a privilege. If you look around the rest of the country and the rest of the world, to be able to do this job, I feel very fortunate, and that motivates me. And it's not easy, and I need to be very clear that you've caught me at a really good time at the moment. There's a lot of good things happening, and I'm feeling very buoyant and positive. There are times when I'm that person who asks myself a lot, at what cost am I doing this? And not just the financial cost, and not just not getting paid a lot for a long time.
Yeah.
But also there's the strain on our lives, because I do work a lot of hours. Mm-hmm. So if it's not going well, how do you keep going? And sometimes you just have to go with a bit of a bad mood, you know, and just let that happen, and know that if you just keep going, it does keep going, and it does keep getting better, and it does keep growing. Mm-hmm. But it's not.
It is definitely like an uphill battle running your own business. It is, it's, you know, every various saying that's out there about wading through mud and pushing things uphill, it really is the truth. And anybody who thinks, I'm going to start my own business and I'm just going to work like 20 hours a week on it and it's going to be really successful, I'm like, yeah, dream on. Like, yes. That's not going to happen.
I think the mistake a lot of us make is you reach a target and you reach a goal that once upon a time felt impossible.
Yeah.
And then once you've done it, yep, done that, what's next?
I'll double it.
And it's like, oh my goodness, why don't I just stop and look at, well, Facebook's quite handy like that, because it sends you memories and you're like, oh yes. My god, 5 years ago I didn't have a clue. Yes. Look at it now.
That's very true. It is. I mean, I'm terrible, and I've said it before on previous podcasts, I am so bad at appreciating my successes. I'm so bad at looking at something and saying, look what you've achieved, look, this is beyond your wildest dreams, how did you, you know, you should be so proud of yourself. I look at it and I'm terrible, and I just think, could have done more, should have done more, should have worked harder, should have done more hours. You know, that's fine, I'll tick that off. But yeah, you know, it's good, but you know, could do better. And it's so bad, because like my friends will be, you know, oh my god, that's amazing, and I'm just like, yeah, well, you know, if I'd worked a bit harder, if I hadn't taken that day off, if I hadn't gone for lunch with so and so, I probably could have made more, could have done more. And it's just so bad. It's such a bad attitude, and it's something I'm definitely changing going forward, because I don't appreciate the things that I do. And I know a lot of businesses that don't, because we push ourselves so hard, because we have to motivate ourselves to achieve our goals. But sometimes we do it to a kind of our own detriment, in the fact that we become the worst boss ever for ourselves, where we're just constantly pushing ourselves.
No, it's really interesting you saying that, because I wonder if that's a characteristic of somebody who runs their own business. Is that what you have to be like to do it? And it's like, no, I'm sure you can do it without being like that.
I think you can, but I think if you don't, it's about appreciating what you've achieved, but then being proud of yourself, but then thinking positively about what you could do next time, rather than I'm terrible for like berating myself for not doing better, when really I should be saying, pat on the back, well done, you achieved your goal, congratulations, now how are you going to do more next time? And being structured and strategic, rather than, well, you're a moron, you should have done more, which is normally what the conversation in my head is. And I will beat myself up over it. But that's just because I'm a high achiever and I'm a perfectionist, and I'm never satisfied with what I've achieved. I always think I should have done more. But I'm also surrounded by people that have that very similar attitude. And I was brought up and educated in a way where it was like, you know, I got an A, but it should have been an A star. You know, so I think it depends on the kind of person you are, and I think a little bit is your background. But I do think you do need to be, otherwise you will always settle. And if you, especially if you'd set yourself, you know, a goal that was perhaps a bit on the lean side, then you're letting yourself off the hook a little bit. I kind of set everything now where I have like 3 forecasts. Like, A is worst case, which is matching previous year. B is sort of up slightly on the previous year, and C is like super ambitious, so therefore I can match against it. As long as I've achieved A, then that's fine. But then I think, now why didn't you achieve B? And then if I achieve B, I think, why didn't you achieve C? And if I achieve C, well, I don't know, that, I mean, that's never gonna happen because it's so unrealistic, but you know, one can dream.
I love that doing worse than the previous year isn't even an option.
Absolutely not. If it's worse than the previous year, then I think you have to start questioning, something's gone really wrong. And I have had that. Like, my second year in business was worse than my first year in business, but the reason was because I changed my business. So every year my business has changed. It's not been very comparable, because I can't really compare to the previous year, because it's different, the business is different. But I think, you know, well, I've got more mailing list subscribers, I've got more Instagram followers, you know, I'm doing a lot more press coverage. Doing worse than a previous year is really not acceptable for me, because my business is built very much on my influence, and my influence is only going up, so therefore sales have to go up along with the influence. If your influence is going up and your sales are going down, something's gone really wrong.
Yeah, no, and that's the same happened to me, and I've been able to look at 5 years and see every year the sales increase and the income increases, but apart from year three where it dipped a little bit, and that was the year that I was about to take that risk with the recycled plastic rugs. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I just felt like I was either going to stop completely or jump. And it was, you've got to jump, haven't you?
You've got to jump. If you really, really are passionate about your business and you really want it to succeed, you have to jump. You have to take the risks. And that is like a massive, I think, trademark of an entrepreneur, really. And that is essentially what we are, even though a lot of us don't like to call ourselves entrepreneurs.
I know, I'm liking that. I've never thought of that.
You are an entrepreneur, you know, whether you like it or not, you are an entrepreneur. And that is a big part of it. And that is why there are people in this world who are entrepreneurs. And that's why there are people that work for entrepreneurs. That is just the way it is. Not everybody. If we were all the same, it would be a very boring planet. And we have to have, you know, that mix of people that work for other people and that people who are at the top. And that's just the way it works, really. It's just life. It's we all have to fit in the wheel. We're all different cogs.
Can I call myself a reluctant entrepreneur, I think?
No.
I'll do it because I have to.
You're not a reluctant entrepreneur. If you were a reluctant entrepreneur, you'd be dragging yourself out of bed every morning and being like, oh God, why have I got to do this? Oh. And you're not. You're so passionate about what you do, so you cannot call yourself a reluctant entrepreneur.
Okay, all right, Mum, I won't do that.
No, it really bugs me when I hear people call themselves, oh, you know, I reluctantly ended up working for myself. And I'm like, oh, so you hate it then, so you're going to close down your business and go back into a full-time job? No. And I'm like, so where's the reluctance? I don't get it. You love what you do and you embrace what you do, and you should be very proud of the fact that you're an entrepreneur. I tell you, it's taken me 3 years to accept that, and even now I still cringe, but it is true. That is what we are. And if you had to put it down on an official form, self-employed, entrepreneur, business owner, they all mean the same thing.
Yeah, it's just a word. It's just a word,
and you're not reluctant. If you had one piece of advice for a future entrepreneur, what would it be?
Oh, I love this. Be realistic. Just keep it real. Be honest with yourself and do the figures. Now, because I did a business plan, I was lucky enough to get onto Hot House with the Crafts Council just at the most important point where I needed it, just when I was really starting to turn it into a business. And I did write a 5-year plan,
love that.
which is great to look back on now, because it's quite hard to do the first time, I think.
Yeah, it is really hard because you have literally no idea, because you're starting with nothing and you're like, so in 5 years I'm going to have achieved this, I think, maybe, perhaps, yeah, I don't know.
Just feeling in the dark. But it was really useful, and I did achieve a lot of it in less than the 5 years, and then some of it, obviously, as probably with most people, is like, well, that wasn't really realistic. But what I didn't do, I worked out how much I wanted to sell and to bring me what kind of income. But I couldn't fully account at that point how much it was going to cost me to achieve that income.
Uh-huh.
So my numbers didn't really stack up quite in the early days, which is why I've made some of the decisions I have with the business. Mm-hmm. You're just learning all the time. But yes, be honest with yourself. You know, a lot of makers, especially high-end makers or craft makers, there will always be that supporting income that you need to have. Or for a long time, especially in textiles and woven textiles.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I really feel that people do underestimate the cost of running their business. I completely agree with you. So last question, Angie, I ask everybody, whose story would you like to hear on Small and Mighty Conversations?
Well, I know loads of designer makers and I'd love to hear them all chat to you on this, because they've all got great stories. So rather than somebody I actually know, I've picked a lady who I've never met, but I've got to know her through Instagram, and I think it's pronounced Gazelle, and she runs Surame Jewelry.
Okay.
She's Mancunian, and we follow each other and we occasionally just message, but she is brilliant on Instagram, and I think you and her would be a really good match. So that's why I'm suggesting her and not all the friends I know in real life.
Oh, I love that. I think that's really good because it's somebody whose story you don't know and you want
to know. She's really good at using Instagram stories, and she does. She talks to the camera, which I think I've probably done once. I use stories and I tell stories through text, but I don't. I've not plucked up the courage to chat to the camera yet.
Oh, I look forward to seeing that. You can do it. You can absolutely do it. Everybody's so fearful of it, but honestly, once you've ripped the band-aid off, you'll be fine. Yeah. You should do it. Amazing. Well, thank you. I will link her details in the show notes for anybody that wants to go and check her out. But I love that. I love the recommendation, and now I'm very keen to go and find out more. Yeah. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, Angie. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always, chatting with you, learning about you and your business. Thank you so much for giving up your time.
Thank you very much. I loved it.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with the lovely Angie. As always, all the links can be found in the show notes. And thank you to each and every one of you who listens to the show. If you listen on iTunes or what is now Apple Podcasts, please do take 5 minutes to rate and review the show. It means an awful lot to me. And don't forget to tag where you are listening to the show, whether you take a photo or a screenshot, and tag at Sam Burgess UK on Instagram, as I love to see where you listen to the show and what you're up to. And I will reshare that on my stories. But until next time, keep pushing forward. Your next great success is just around the corner.